Eurocontrol. Aviation Straight Talk. Live.
Hello, everybody. Good afternoon, good morning, depending on where you are. Thanks for coming back. Thanks for joining us. Welcome to another Eurocontrol Hard Talk Live, where we are trying to work out how we build back better in the world of aviation. Today, we have the CEO of the world's oldest airline, KLM, Mr. Peter Elbers, and he will be talking to us about all the, how he sees the world and how he thinks that we might perhaps build back better. Welcome to Hard Talk Live. Welcome to Eurocontrol. It's not been the easiest of years, has it, for your 100th year?
Well, good afternoon. Thank you for having me. No, it's been a roller coaster. We celebrated 100 years indeed last year, October, and just a couple of months later, this whole crisis has started, and we're in the midst of the biggest crisis the aviation industry has faced probably since it ever existed.
You must almost have had more flights in your first year than in your 100th year.
Yeah, well, at one point in time, we looked back to our production levels and we came to, I think it was 1933 or something as a comparison where we are. Fortunately, we're a bit higher now, but still the numbers are incredibly low.
Wow, 1933, my goodness. When you started as KLM, I mean, as befits the Netherlands generally, you were very much a free trade pirate, weren't you, KLM? You were a sixth freedom carrier. You almost invented the whole sixth freedom long haul model. Do you think we'll ever get back to that?
Well, yeah, we have a long history as a sixth freedom carrier. The way how we connect the world to the Netherlands and the Netherlands to the world, we have all our customers transferring here in Amsterdam, and with that we have developed it into a very valid and solid business model, which is also contributing a lot to the country. My personal view is, if we look at the industry today and look where the challenge is going forward, there's going to be even more sort of emphasis on this model, which is the ultimate proof of efficiency. And if you have all these smaller places in Europe and all these smaller places in the US, for example, the need to travel between these places will continue to be there. And with that, I think the good and efficient hubs, and we're proud to have one of them here in Amsterdam, Schiphol Airport, will be the winners of tomorrow.
Well, indeed. And Eamon said in his presentation that Schiphol remains the busiest airport in Europe. And your background, of course, in the airline, you're very long and very distinguished career in the airline involved cargo for some time, didn't it? And I think cargo must have been an important part of what you were doing for a while there.
Well, our philosophy throughout this crisis, I mean, initially we were sort of scaling down, and we saw it in Eamon's presentation. At one point in time, we were operating 24 flights on a single day, which basically were just repatriation flights. That was back in April. But after that, we started to rebuild the network, not the capacity, but rebuild the network. And actually pretty quick, we have restarted all our European destinations. Wherever we could fly, we were flying, in an ultimate attempt to keep the system running again. So with that, we do have our long-haul network in place where we're allowed to fly, where we can fly, and we have our European feed in place. Having said that, a lot of destinations where we used to fly six times a day or seven times a day are now just back to only one or two. But it's important to recover the network and sort of offer the maximum opportunity for our customers to connect over Schiphol.
So you see the future still for airlines in a network model, not in a point-to-point model?
Well, absolutely, yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think even stronger, a lot of these sort of smaller point-to-point or smaller airports connecting to some of the larger points, and that these are the sort of last ones to recover. I think the recovery will be led by a lot of small flows, which will be flown throughout the hubs. And again, I believe that we, with our network in Amsterdam, KLM and the Air France KLM group, is in a great position to benefit from that and to take advantage of that. The people traveling from Billund in Denmark to Little Rock in Arkansas, they need to have an opportunity to travel. There's not going to be a direct flight, not tomorrow, not the day after tomorrow, not in the next 10 years. So we do have, together with our partners, I think the good foundation to continue to serve that market.
I'm really interested that you say that, that you think the future, if you like, certainly for a long time, is going to be thin routes or small town, lots and lots of smaller sectors, smaller loads, smaller groupings. So it's going to reward, well, if I'd thought about it, I think I might have said that rewarded a regional carrier, but you're saying no. In fact, it's going to reward a long network carrier like yourself.
Well, the regional network is part of our system. So we're the largest operator of Embraer aircraft on the European continent. And why do we do that? Because we connect all these small and mid-sized European cities, channel that through Amsterdam, and connect it to places in the US. And again, if we have the big pipeline, so to speak, between Amsterdam and Atlanta and Paris and Atlanta, and there combine it with the strength of our US partner, Delta in this case, it was very much the foundation of our model in the last two decades. With the economic boom in the last few years, we saw a lot of new routes coming up. But clearly, with the demand dropping, and probably especially on the business segment being away for a longer time, the hub system and our regional network feeding that system will gain in strength again.
Right. So looking forward, you think that the airline of the future is going to have a large fleet of small airplanes and a moderate fleet of large airplanes? Is that right?
I believe the separation between the sort of European low-cost carriers on the one hand side, which are there and which are thriving, looking also at the numbers here, will be there. But next to that, there's going to be a need for long-haul travel. And the only way to keep up a long-haul network and to have the sort of overall network system running is to have an extensive feeder network to that. And again, I think also a lot of European economies and cities and communities will have to recover economically after this crisis. I mean, the crisis is devastating for a lot of local communities. The way to recover has, after past crises, been aviation and international trade. So I believe that aviation can and will, and we're committed to do so, play a very important role in that economic recovery as well.
So how do you see the aviation industry 3 years from now, maybe 5 years from now? Do you think playing that role, playing that part, being an important part of any recovery, do you think it's going to get back to the way it was?
Well, probably every crisis so far in the industry has led to consolidation, has led to new dynamics and innovation, if you wish. If I look a little bit back to the S-Cloud closure, for example, for us, it was a way to move forward with our social media. The call centers were they couldn't handle the enormous volume of calls, and social media was the way to communicate. And it has sort of started and kickstarted really our innovation and our digital trajectory towards our customers. If I see some of the challenges we have today in the field of sustainability, in the field of predictability, in the field of being agile with your company and to communicate with your clients, I think this will help new things like artificial intelligence, using bots for quick communication to our customers. So next to the crisis management, I feel we should embrace some of the sort of technological advancements we have in order to build a better future for the industry.
And I'm really interested that you keep talking about the fact that it's about communicating with your passengers. I mean, one of the fears I've had recently looking at a lot of what the airlines are saying is it's not very customer-centric. It's everything, not unsurprisingly, I guess everyone's worried about themselves and to survive. But I'm also really interested that you mentioned...
I may interrupt you, I would tend to, and I think you wanted to have more like a conversation.
But
I tend to disagree. Where we had a challenge and we still have a challenge is to make sure that the sort of speed of cancellations and the refund procedures are being done in a good way, because the amounts are so huge, not only in terms of money, but the volume of claims is huge. Mm-hmm. Having said that, our communication to our customers in terms of what sanitary measures are we taking? What's our rebooking policy? How do we make sure that we keep social distance on board? The information on the HEPA filters, the push we do to the European governments to make progress. So I think we are communicating a lot, and not only us at KLM or Air France KLM, but I think in the entire industry, I've seen some great examples from other carriers, also our partner Delta, for example, how effective we communicate to our customers. So especially in this crisis, we're doing so.
Well, I'm pleased that you say that. I mean, from my perspective, as a general comment, I don't think passengers are afraid to fly. I think that the message about HEPA filters and so forth is getting through. I think the real issue is they're afraid to arrive. I mean, there are just no healthy destinations at the moment, and they don't know what will happen when they have to come home, and those sorts of things. But and I'm happy to have that conversation, but perhaps if I could move on. The other C word that you used, apart from customers there, was consolidation. Now, KLM, of course, KLM Air France is one of the world's great examples of a successful airline consolidation. I'm going to ask you about that in a minute, but before we get to that, do you think that we'll see more consolidation as a result of the crisis?
Well, every crisis has led eventually to more consolidation. I think all the airlines today are on a sort of short-term survival modus with different ways, with either government support or bridging loans or equity or all kind of sort of survival modus issues. We know that the phase two recovery, it will take a long time, a couple of years, and it's not going to be a straight line. It's going to be ups and downs all the time. I would assume that, like we have seen after either 9/11 or after some of the previous crises we had, a industry consolidation will take place. And indeed, Air France KLM back in 2004 was at least in Europe on the front. It was one of the first, if not the first, in terms of consolidation. It has really helped us to build two very strong hubs and a strong foundation for that group. Going forward, we are committed, and I think the strong states as shareholders are committed to make sure that we keep a place and a space in that European aviation.
Do you see opportunities for Air France KLM in that inevitable consolidation?
Well, there's going to be, but probably again, first we need to get some solid ground underneath our feet. I think today the situation is still so unpredictable, and we saw, I guess, the situation at the end of August or the middle of August, which was positive, was going in the right way. And clearly today, in the middle of October, we're in a very different state. So we need probably to have a little bit more stability and either a vaccine or a speed testing before flying. Or we need to have some sort of solution on stability of travel. And after that, I'm sure more discussions will come up. But stability first would be the priority for every airline, including us.
Well, indeed. But let's assume a vaccine within 12 months. Is that pessimistic? Within 6 months, perhaps? And so then at the moment, Eurocontrol's market predictions are returning by 2024, I think, the start of 2024.
Yeah.
Which is all still 4 years away, 3 or 4 years away. So I guess it's silly to ask what you think airlines will look like 3 years from now. But pitching forward to 10 years forward, do you think we'll have as many airlines? Do you think we'll have the same sort of distinction between the low-cost carriers and the legacy carriers, the long-haul network carriers? Do you think that's going to carry on?
Well, the prediction for Eurocontrol, which is pretty similar to that prediction of IATA, and I guess we use the same prediction. Doesn't make any sense to change these predictions all the time. I mean, it's difficult to say how December would look like, leave alone how 2023 would look like. So we just follow that very same line and very same prediction in terms of trajectory to recovery. I take some hope, if you wish. If I see, for example, looking to our markets here, April and May, it was completely, there was no flights, no nothing, just a handful. When it started to open in June, we were back to 60 to 70% of our production in July. So especially the leisure traffic and some of the short haul traffic is coming back, and we saw it. And now, of course, with the second lockdown, it's dropping again. But again, looking at the numbers of Eamon for China, 90% is back on the domestic travel. So I would tend to be a bit more optimistic on the sort of medium haul traffic and the speed to recovery. What will take a bit longer is some of the sort of new international markets, and we build up as a group Air France, KLM, a good position in India, a good position in Brazil. That will probably take a bit longer and will be more to the 23-24 time frame.
Yeah.
To the business models, I think that was your other point there. I do believe that you will indeed see probably Europe is lagging behind somewhat 10 years compared to the US in terms of industry consolidation. Well, look at how the US looks today. You'll probably know how Europe will look in 10 years from now. So there's going to be a few large low-cost carriers. Then there's going to be a few big systems like we see actually today already emerging with the Air France KLM group, the Lufthansa group, the IAG group. And there's going to be some new contenders or regional contenders in that system. And the European consolidation by nature, because Europe is different with all the countries and all the national rules and regulations, is different than the US. And therefore, some of the brands are existing. And sometimes we say that the brands are a blockage to further consolidation. We could also see it as a strength. I mean, for us, Air France, KLM, we have two fantastic but very distinct brands. And I consider it an asset to have such two strong brands rather than as a weakness.
Understandably, I can see that. The US situation is the top six carriers are 95% of the market, whereas in Europe, the top six carriers are something like 52% of the market, were before the catastrophe, of course. Turning perhaps slightly more to what you're expecting from governments at this point, Eamon mentioned his thought that the decision of the council this week was a good start, but nothing more than that. The industry has come out fairly strongly against the level of coordination. What is it that you're looking for from the governments who are, like the rest of us, facing a completely unknown, unpredictable thing at the moment? What sort of predictability do you think is good?
Yeah, well, Eamon was more mild than he usually is in his comments. And I would applaud Eurocontrol for the work they're doing and the push they're giving, because you were saying earlier, for the consumers are not afraid to fly. This is exactly what we get back. People are not afraid to board an aircraft. They're not afraid to fly. What they're afraid of is suddenly countries are changing their status, and that when they come back, they have to go in quarantine, or when they are there, suddenly the rules are changing, or when they fly to a certain country, if they leave from Amsterdam, it's okay. If they leave from Brussels, it's not okay, or the other way around. And I think precisely that we need to clarify ASAP and the steps taken for that. I'm glad with that step. But by the way, after 8 months of corona crisis, it's about time that we get a coordinated approach and that we get a sort of unified dashboard, if you wish, on how do we regard the countries in Europe when it comes to traveling there, yes or no. And it's an important step. It's overdue, but it's an important step. I'm glad it's there. We should sort of speed it up. And the next step really is speed up the sort of rules and regulations when it comes to testing. Speedy testing before flying a certain distance. I think we should probably spend a bit less time on discussing what the exact rules should be, as long as we make some speed. And I mean, the second wave is just underpinning the need for the industry to have that set of rules, because we were on the way to recovery. We're all being put back now.
Right. Changing subjects a little bit, we've already talked a bit about Schiphol, but we saw airlines privatize, 25 years ago now, KLM obviously one of them, and now we've started to see airports starting to privatize. What's your idea of the right model for airports?
Well, in general, privatization is not a target in itself, right? It's a means to an end. And privatization of the airlines in itself in the past has led to more competition, with more competition to better service, better prices, more choice for customers. That was the whole philosophy against privatization initially in the US and thereafter in Europe. And I think that as a principle still stands. Today's reality for airlines, of course, is very different, but over time we'll go back, I would assume, to that privatization. For airports, I would say it's a little bit different, and for ANSPs even more different, because that's sort of infrastructure. And whereas a customer in Amsterdam could choose probably 200 airlines to fly with in sort of pre-COVID situation, so there's 200 airlines, and even on the a route like Amsterdam, Barcelona, you have 7 or 8 airlines to choose from. The reality is I cannot choose airports. I can choose where I fly, but not where I fly from. I cannot sort of pick up 200 aircraft and say, you know what, I don't like it anymore at Schiphol. I go to Brussels or to Paris or to Frankfurt.
Or to Lelystad.
Or to Lelystad. So this whole idea of competition, there is some competition between airports, but not to the scale that there is competition between airlines. So I would take a very cautious approach on that, and to have mechanisms whereby airports are incentivized to be customer-oriented, to have a good cost basis, to be efficient, that's great. I'm not sure if you need to be privatized for that. Actually, I think it's better not to be privatized for that.
As you rightly say, privatization is a mode. It's not a target. I agree with that. But you've also mentioned the ANSPs, and thank you for that, because it's one of my favourite topics. Why can't we get a single European sky?
Yeah, well, if anything, I think today's crisis, it was already before we were in this COVID situation. I mean, we are putting so much efforts and so much money on the field of sustainability, which every euro we spend on that is a euro well spent in fleet renewal and all things. But then having sort of the political unwill not to move forward on the single European sky, and with that burning and wasting 10% of the CO2 emissions in Europe, has been a shame. It's an inefficiency for our customers. It's a waste in terms of CO2 emissions and fuel. I really hope that now all the European states are putting so much support to their airlines, and it would be incomprehensible really to support airlines on the one hand side and to leave an ineffective, inefficient, scattered European airspace system in place. So I would really urge and push to move finally forward on that. And I think Eurocontrol and the way a European airspace could be working, if there's a time to move forward, is really now. Why can it not be done? It's political. So if we need to have the political courage or even ownership, I mean, the big European projects came because leaders, state leaders, took ownership and responsibility for that. And I can only hope and plead for European leaders to do so.
And are you talking to your state, to France's leaders and what have you about
sure,
this?
Sure, we're talking. Well, the Dutch airspace is not the biggest airspace in Europe, but sure, we're talking to them, and surely we're pushing them. And again, I think before COVID-19, it was a matter of CO2 burn and inefficiencies and delays really in the European airspace. Today, with so much pressure on cost and the mere survival of the industry, it should be a no-brainer to move forward on that.
The Netherlands may not have a lot of airspace, but they've got a very busy airport, of course, and a very busy terminal area.
That's precisely why I'm pushing so much for this. Again, if we look, it's incomprehensible for me that European states are spending billions to support their airlines to get through this crisis. And they are supporting airlines not because out of charity purpose, they're supporting airlines because they're so incredibly important for their economies. If I see what we do in cargo, how we bring in millions and millions of masks and medical equipment just to make sure that we are dealing for the medical side with this COVID crisis, the repatriation flights, so all the efforts airlines, and we are doing that here in the Netherlands, and I'm sure the same is happening in the other countries, then it should be a no-brainer to move forward on this one.
You've raised two really interesting issues there. I mean, one of course is there any way we could, for example, consolidate air navigation service providers? As you say, it's very fragmented. It would seem that there was an opportunity there. And I'd love your views on that. Before I get to that, the other thing that the All Cargo Carriers Trade Association this week or late last week came out with a paper asking for complete deregulation to be separated from the rest of the aviation industry's 1944 regulatory structure. Do you think that's a good idea? Would you support that?
Well, I think the regulatory structure of the industry of 1944, and of course everyone you ask, is it good to have a 1944 structure as a dominant structure in the industry, would immediately be inclined to say, no, let's get away with it, let's have a new one.
Sadly, that's not true. Willie Walsh a couple of weeks ago said, we can't be bothered fixing it.
But for me, I would say it would be tempting to say let's get rid of it. I think the reality is that the industry itself has a lot of very specific characteristics, also the ownership and control rules, which have a certain logic and a certain background, and with that, and I think the crucial element of having infrastructure is a differentiating factor between, let's say, the car industry or refrigerators or beer or whatever other industry you might feel about. What I wouldn't be supportive to is a sort of pick and choose, and I would say, you know what, let's exclude cargo from it, or let's do it like that. Then, I mean, tomorrow the cargo industry would be in a worse shape, and then what? We're going to include it again? So if we go for an update of some of these regulatory framework, fine, by all means, let's review what still matches and what doesn't match. But I wouldn't be supportive for a sort of pick and choose approach, and today the cargo market, because of the lack of flights on the full passenger aircraft, is there. We would sort of change one part of it.
Okay.
Again, the ownership and control structure supports to some extent within certain regions some consistency. I mean, even today the European framework for support from the is within the European framework. So I think we should be very careful by just doing away with it.
Okay. You've gone about 180 degrees there, but that's all right.
I think you misunderstood me, Andrew, when I started to say it's tempting to do away with the 1944 regulation. And then you interrupted me. I would say it's tempting to do that, but the reality is we shouldn't move so fast. So that's
okay.
It's not 180 degrees. Sorry about that.
No, not at all. Damn, I thought I had a story there.
No, you haven't. Sorry about that.
Let me, in the last couple of minutes, ask you about the sustainability stuff. KLM, as you rightly said earlier on, has been right at the forefront of that. And late last year, you came out saying, think about not taking a short haul flight, think about taking the train. Do you still think that's the way forward?
Yeah, our initiative last year, our Fly Responsibly initiative, was both daring as well as consistent with our initiatives. For the last, 10, 15 years, we're in the top of the Dow Jones Sustainability Index as an Air France KLM group. And within that part, KLM is taking a lot of initiatives in doing so. And we have put our money where our mouth is in terms of participating in biofuels and participating in new technology. And there's always a discussion on trains. I would support a better train network within Europe using some of the sort of feeds towards airports. If we have great connections between some of the European cities, perfect. But if a train between Amsterdam and Hamburg or Amsterdam and Berlin still takes 7 hours to go by train from Amsterdam to Berlin, don't be surprised that we have 10 flights a day. So again, I think sustainability will be even more important after this crisis than it was before. So I would still support very much our initiative of last year. In fact, we're sort of pushing it forward to make the next steps there.
So do you think the future is going to be in sustainable fuels, or is it going to be in the Airbus hydrogen airplanes? Where do you think we're going?
I think there's a couple of factors. The sustainable fuels, the quantities are by far not enough to do it. So it's probably a transition to more synthetic fuels or a real differentiation there. So a combination of more different planes. I mean, we had a Flying V model building with the TU, the technical university here in Delft, and they're working together with Airbus. And I'm impressed by the progress they make in a very short time. It will take a long time before it flies, but at least it demonstrates that the industry is sort of forward looking. So on the short term, so we have a couple of horizons. On the short term, we continue to work with biofuels and whatever we can get, we do. Whatever we can do with hydrogen, fine, we do it. Long term, we'd probably have a solution with different components in it.
Right. Okay, so my traditional final question now, the one I ask as we run out of time, if you could say but one thing to Eamon, what would you be saying to Eurocontrol about what it can do to support aviation in Europe?
Yeah, and I'm not saying that to flatter Eamon, but I think Eurocontrol is doing a great job there in providing a lot of factual data about the industry, pushing for a more coherent approach, and pushing for that single European skysing. I think the priorities on coherent approach, single European spy, and pushing the facts forwards is really very important, because the only way to get this industry back is to have a combined and unified approach. And Eurocontrol is taking a very important role in that.
Thank you for that. And let me say, Peter, as we finish, that in fact, even in the Hard Talk series, Eurocontrol is working very hard to find a unified and simplified way to go forward. And in the meantime, Pieter, thank you so much for your time. I thought it was a really fascinating conversation, and I'm grateful for your time. Ladies and gentlemen, I hope you learned as much as I did. I thought it was really great, and I look forward to seeing you next time, and I wish you a very good afternoon.
This episode is from our Aviation Straight Talk Live series, bringing you exclusive insights from aviation leaders across the world.